Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch.
Now, you might be able to hear trees blowing around, and that's because I have a new job as a tree surgeon. I'm actually away watching the cricket, which I'm pretending.
Well,
is
like
working.
I see, you're on a balcony with palm trees waving luxuriously behind
they
you.
You know, usually, as you well know, my normal day is made up of get up about, but kids are listening 7, real 9:30.
Yeah. You're an old bloke. You get up at 6 to do the garden, don't you?
Yeah, garden at 6. Yeah, then just watch Sky Sports all day. But here, because time difference and the fact that I'm frightened of the internet, means that I picked up all of my football knowledge this week from people I've met in the street. So I'm not across.
Do you mean that there's not like 24-hour wall-to-wall coverage of the Premier League in Barbados?
I'm sure there is, but not where I'm staying, there isn't. No, there's a lot of cricket stuff going on.
Of course, yes.
So, I've noticed some things have happened, so I'll try and chime in.
Well, amongst the things that have happened, Barcelona announced a new stadium and shirt sponsorship deal with Spotify that's apparently worth 235 million quid. So for all the musicians wondering where their royalty money has been going, that's where. Still, at least Spotify haven't executed anyone, as far as I know, so they'll probably pass La Liga's fit and proper partner test. And the Premier League has cancelled its television contract with Russia, but the Champions League was screened there as normal, apparently, this week. Now, UEFA haven't pulled the plug on that deal. And when he was asked about this, UEFA president Alexander Seferin said this: "Often there is a bit of a double standard." Which is a great quote, isn't it? It's like asking a murderer to explain himself and him saying, "Often there is a bit of stabbing." Just think of all those poor Russians led into a conflict nobody wants except for the madman in charge, crushed under the weight of sanctions, no McDonald's, no KFC, and then they have to watch Man United, Atletico Madrid. Haven't they suffered enough?
They suffered enough, indeed. I love the idea that you say, we're worried that there might be some sort of legal ramification, and you're thinking, they're invading a country.
Yeah. It's war.
The niceties of the law.
It's not a war crime, you're fine.
The only thing I have noticed was just trickles of information get through. I see that Nazanin Zaghari-Ratcliffe has been released by Iran, but that didn't surprise me. She's been there 6 years, and I don't think she's played once.
That was she got a free transfer.
Really, wasn't it?
The news story.
She's a free agent, but don't say
no,
that.
No, don't say it. Don't use the word agent.
Agent.
She's just free.
smack up to date, because this is, well, it's Thursday morning here, but it's probably Thursday afternoon where you are. Mark Guay gets England call-up.
Yes, that's right. And
I didn't know he was.
You know, he's a Crystal Palace center. Crystal Palace got a goalless draw with City on Monday and defended, brilliantly. The next thing you know, I mean, he's one of these kids who came up at Chelsea and then just never got a chance at Chelsea. I think, Gay, like Fiacco Tomori.
I think he's on loan.
I'm not 100% sure whether he's on loan loan and has been bought. But whatever, he's having a good season. He looks good. Good for him. Old Slabhead's still in the squad, so maybe he won't make the team. But Southgate has dropped Kyle Walker to make room for him, Mark Gay. And and also Sancho and Rashford are out. And
That'll be good for their confidence.
Well, you know, yeah, they need a pickup, don't they?
yeah. Mind you, see, Mark Gray literally, you know, as good as his last game. So now he's playing for England, having had a good game on Monday.
Yes. And Southgate was saying that they'd be watching him when Palace played Wolves before that. But it's because of Monday. It's because of, it's like in cricket when someone has one good innings in the County Championship. Next thing you know, they're in the England team the next week. You know, that's how it used to work. Isn't it?
I like the idea that England scouts go and watch just one player. You know, you can say, how did you think Butler did? I wasn't watching him. You know what I mean? Never occurred to me he was on the pitch.
Well, no, there's been a rumour for a couple of days that Southgate was going to pack the squad with Newcastle's 80 million quid's worth of signings. You know, Dan Byrne was going to be the centre-back, Matt Target was going to be the left-back, Trippier's injured, of course. But and he's been watching Newcastle, but obviously he's been watching their opponents. But still, anyway, whilst we're watching your tropical storm building up behind you,
it's building nicely.
Yeah, before you take a long, refreshing sip from the delicious sparkling fruit punch with the little umbrella in it that is the Premier League, let us first force down a tepid mouthful of the supermarket own brand cola-style brown-flavoured inadequately carbonated beverage that is the very bottom of the EFL, which is where my team, Oldham Athletic, are still languishing despite our recent revival, which has hit the skids in the last week or so and is currently progressing with the speed and effectiveness of a Russian military convoy. On Saturday, we played Swindon Town away. I was expecting a nervy game. Swindon have been hanging around the playoffs most of the season, but just recently had a couple of damaging defeats. So there was bound to be a bit of anxiety the longer they went without putting away this easy game against the team in 23rd. What I wasn't expecting, though, was for them to be like Atletico fucking Madrid. The diving, the rolling about, the whining, the surrounding the referee demanding bookings, the getting up completely unhurt as soon as they got what they wanted, the shirt pulling, the sly ankle tapping. It was like they'd been reading the Diego Simeone playbook. And the referee bought it, not just hook, not just hook and line, but yes, both of those,
sinker,
obviously,
sinker.
But also unbelievably sinker. Yeah,
no,
you wouldn't have.
You see, I didn't think you were going to go there.
I got there eventually. I mean, he could hardly have been more of a homer if he'd dressed in a muumuu and got a drinking bird to make the decisions for him. I mean, 8 bookings he dished out to Oldham players, 2 of them to Jordan Clark, who went off. And even though we were only down to 10 men for the last few minutes of added time, nonetheless, that was enough for the 96th-minute free kick to get bundled home and for Swindon to celebrate like they'd won the fucking cup. So that was the second injury time sickener in a row, which gives you the sort of distant stomach ache that's telling you this is the sort of thing that happens to the team that's going to end up going down. And then we went to Walsall without 2 of the back 4 that has steadied the ship recently, with Maguire injured halfway through the Swindon game and Clark suspended because of a sending off, and with a youngster, Will Sutton, hurriedly recalled from a loan spell at Farsley Celtic and thrust straight into the starting 11. The stomach ache getting a little bit worse now. But he did well, the young lad, and put us in front with a header from a corner, and then they equalised with the sort of goal that happens to teams in serious trouble. Hallam Hope got fouled in the centre circle, his Achilles trodden on in a way that sent his boot flying off several feet away, and astonishingly the referee just waved play on. And while the Oldham players were still picking up their jaws off the floor, Walsall carried on and scored. And in the second half we conceded a second that looked miles offside to a player we used to have on loan, Connor Wilkinson, which is another doom-laden signifier, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yep.
And with VAR, I'll say that properly, we'd have won 1-0.
Yeah, yeah.
But then if there'd been VAR, we wouldn't have been playing fucking Walsall, would we? We'd been being thrashed by some Premier League outfit. So, swings and roundabouts, isn't it? And our captain, Carl Piergiani, was booked, which means he's going to miss the next 2 games. I don't know if we've even got another young centre-half on loan anywhere that we can recall. And now Stevenage, who are 3rd from bottom and looking like now the only team we might catch, have sacked Paul Tisdale and appointed Steve Evans, the guy like...
Steve Evans, I
the guyliner guy.
That was the big news here in Barbados. I actually did. Somebody actually came up to me in the street and said, have you heard Steve Evans has gone to Stevenage?
Oh, man. When he left Gillingham in January when they were 3rd from bottom of League 1, and 3rd from bottom is good in League 2, of course, so he's, he's a bit of a specialist of that position. And if they get a new manager bounce as well, then we'll be screwed. So that sinking feeling has properly returned after a few weeks of hope that never really felt right somehow. The worry now is that the much-vaunted Chesurrection might end up as factually unconvincingly as the original, and relegation is beginning to feel like it may be our Chestiny after all.
Well, I've got to say that I definitely detect a gear change in your attitude there. And it's a change down, I have to say. And possibly into reverse.
Well, at very least, park. Yeah. We're heading for park.
Yeah. But I love the fact that you've read all of these, all of the augury that's coming with your relegation. It's like you're on the road to Delphi and then you say to your mate, do you know what? There's no point in even going there. We know what's going to happen.
And I've got a sneaky feeling.
Never mind.
I've got a sneaky feeling I might have accidentally killed my dad on the way.
Yes. Still... Yeah. And married my mother.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so moving on from that, the Greeks, God. Football, as it says in our introduction, football has an uncanny way, doesn't it, of throwing up a fixture that focuses a harsh, unforgiving spotlight directly onto the issue of the day. And it did this most spectacularly on Sunday afternoon when Chelsea met Newcastle in a game that was dubbed, and you know how football loves a dubbing.
The sports washing derby. Don't tell me.
It was.
Yes, I didn't even know that.
And if it becomes a regular thing, I think Sky are going to come up with something more catchy and with a logo, you know, like El Corruptico, something like that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Because it's the issue of club ownership that is currently the really hot topic, isn't it?
I'm just imagining some sort of terrible graphic with 860 deaths to date this year at the Saudi cartel. I've done so much better than Abramovich's boys. It's awful stuff.
Well, you know, the story. Story is ongoing since you left. Chelsea's longtime owner, Roman Abramovich, has had his assets seized because of his close ties with Vladimir Putin. Chelsea currently operating under a licence from the government that severely restricts their ability to make or spend money. They can't sell tickets. The club shop is closed. There are restrictions on what they can spend on everything, including travel. So it looks as though, anyway, Roman's sports washing days may be done. Newcastle, meanwhile, relative newcomers to the sports washing game, having been taken over by the Saudi Public Investment Fund, that is in no way the same thing as the Saudi state, although Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia, is also the boss of the fund. So, on the field, the game was won by a brilliant moment of skill from Kai Havertz with a couple of minutes to go, with Newcastle fans feeling he shouldn't have been on the field after elbowing Dan Byrne in the face. And they also thought that they should...
He did well to get his elbow off
I think he had a little stepladder. You couldn't see it on the picture, but still. And they also thought they should have had a penalty after Chalabar's enthusiastic attempt to swap shirts with Jacob Murphy during the game. But that was the story on the field. Off the field, the story was, in the stands, the Newcastle fans were chanting... No noise from the bankrupt boys, and Chelsea are skint, Mags are rich.
That's not so good.
Extremely poor pickings there, chant-wise. But Chelsea fans were chanting the name of Roman Abramovich and displaying a banner reading the Roman Empire, which kind of it kind of makes you think, doesn't it, that the fans are not really engaging with the issues of whether football club ownership has or should have a moral or ethical dimension. It's just about the Chelsea fans holding up banners saying, keep your bullshit politics out of football. You know, it's like, look around and see what's going on, you know.
Chris, you know me. I like to be as fair as I possibly can. And hasn't there been enough time since Abramovich was in charge at Chelsea to have forgotten him by now?
Move on.
And to rebrand him. It's like Vlad the Impaler. You know, after a few centuries, you've got a Vlad the Impaler experience. Do you know what I mean?
You impale one person.
Person, yeah. And, you know, and that's what you remember.
Yeah, well, Boris Johnson pleaded with the Chelsea fans, this is going to work, not to chant their support for Roman Abramovich. I mean, so they're definitely going to be stopping, aren't they?
Oh,
I mean, because he's the Prime Minister. You know, you have to respect that, don't you? Boris, this is where this game, the Saudi Newcastle against the Abramovich Chelsea, is right on the apex of the news. Boris has headed out to Saudi Arabia and the UAE this week to make absolutely certain we can still get oil from there if we cut off supplies from Russia. And Keir Starmer pointed out that going cap in hand from dictator to dictator is not the same thing as having an energy strategy, but it's the one that we've got.
Yeah.
But the Saudis, unbelievably, are far more palatable than Vladimir Putin just now, even though they themselves, you know, have been committing war crimes in Yemen for ages.
Yeah.
And this last weekend, they held a mass execution of 81 men. Almost as if they realise they can pretty much get away with whatever the fuck they like these days without Western leaders being able to say too much about it.
But I did read a little bit about that. And obviously, that on the back of the 81 executions in one day, which is, of course, just staggering. So difficult to understand. And then apparently Johnson said, yes, well, I did raise the issue of human rights. So the day after he came back, they executed three more. As if to say, yeah, he raised it, all right.
I shall be raising, as I always do, the issues of human rights on the way to other more significant discussions.
Yes. He highlighted, I mean, this is so lame, but he highlighted the £1 billion that Saudi Arabia have invested in green aviation fuel in the UK, which is, of course, greenwashing as opposed to sports washing. And it ignores the fact that even a billion is mere pocket change for the Saudis, assuming that they have pockets. I mean, maybe they have money belts or people whose job it is to follow them around being their pocket guys. I don't know. But see, if there was an independent regulator, and if there was a standard to be applied, you know, that included a human rights component, as suggested by Amnesty International, then perhaps we'd be spared the unedifying spectacle of Eddie Howe being asked, ooh, you know, about the penalty that wasn't given, and ooh, about the sending off that didn't happen, the Dan Byrne thing, and the end of the unbeaten run, and then what did you think about the 81 men executed yesterday by your employer? Come on, Eddie, what did you think? Come on, speak up. You know, I mean, maybe this is the time, you know, for because the independent regulator thing was dealt with such, it was dismissed so quickly by the Premier League and by the Football Association who wanted to do it, who wanted to be in charge of the independent regulator. But now, surely now, the situation that football is in now, the Abramovich thing and the Saudi thing, the collision of that, the one finishing, the one starting, surely now it must be apparent to everyone that they need to take seriously the idea of football being regulated, because it can't look after itself. It can't look after itself in a way that is acceptable. Don't you think?
Well, no, I mean, what's been interesting about the whole thing was, if you remember right at the beginning, there was a lot of talk about, you know, why is football suddenly got to be in the middle of all of this stuff that's happening in Ukraine? But now they're so, you know, they are so far stepped in blood.
Well, yeah.
they really can't help themselves. What would be interesting is when we come out the other side, because I know what will happen, they'll say there are more important things to deal with. But it's... If it was an argument before, it's kind of an argument won. Now,
you would have thought, wouldn't you?
But whether that means anything happens, it's a completely different thing.
I mean, one of the interesting things about the Abramovich era is he was almost like the archetypal mass murderer, wasn't he? I mean, not that he's a mass murderer, but when they go to the house and they talk to the neighbours, oh, he was so quiet, he kept himself to himself. You never heard a peep from him, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason why you didn't hear a peep from him was, if anyone was going to ever write anything, even a biography of someone else that he was just like a footnote in, he would sue them for libel in a prohibitive fashion so this stuff didn't come out, with the most expensive lawyers in the world, you know. And so it's only now he can't pay those lawyers that these things are coming out. There was a Panorama this week, which you won't have seen because of the tropical trip thing.
Storm.
But there were some extraordinary nuggets in this Panorama about Roman Abramovich. I mean, some of the stuff that has been known, but he's been so litigious it hasn't come out. Essentially, they were establishing pretty much that for years he's been Putin's money man, in charge of Putin's personal fortune. And between them, they've essentially stolen billions of dollars from Russian taxpayers through stitching up deals between themselves as businessmen and themselves as the Russian government. And there's a great story about the bidding process to buy a state energy company called Slavneft, where there was a Chinese bid for this, which was twice what Abramovich was bidding. And the Chinese sent a negotiator who was kidnapped at the airport and not released until they withdrew their bid, leaving the Abramovich brackets Putin brackets bid as the only one on the table.
To be fair, Chris, Tony Pulis did that with Azmir Begovic. He took him to a hotel on a transfer deadline day and tracked him in a room with Kempe, his assistant manager. Anyway, but the thing about, all of that stuff, it's, you know, clearly awful. And you know Amanda Staveley's going to be watching that and going, well, if you're going to be picky, you know what I mean? If you're going to start picking over every single deal, those people of us that keep the economy moving.
Seferin said, by the way, about not pulling the UEFA deal out of the UEFA coverage out of Russia was, some of the Western governments aren't much good when you look at them more closely, you know. He did that little stumbling, that I just did when he was saying it. So Chelsea are still going ahead apparently with this. The deadline for bids is tomorrow. And there are a number of parties lining up. One of the interested parties is supposedly the Saudi media group. You can't help noticing the alarming proximity of frying pan to fire there. But if they're a Saudi media group, then they've probably got some money, but probably not as much as the Crown Prince, who has, let us not forget, not been afraid to chop up media people with a bone saw. So you'd worry about how the next sports washing derby might go, or what nickname Sky might have to give it, you know. But the race seems basically to be coming down to three American-led groups, Americans.
Yeah, there's the Cubs.
Yeah,
man,
the Ricketts family, the owners of the Chicago Cubs. Now, this is the news today here. I don't know if you've heard this. They've apparently joined forces with Ken Griffin, the hedge fund billionaire. And that's what it says in the papers, as though everyone's going to go, oh, yeah, of course, Ken Griffin, the hedge fund billionaire. Like, that's a thing. Like, you know who hedge fund billionaires are, you know?
As opposed to everybody else who's thinking, Ken Griffin, isn't he a character in Family Guy?
Yeah. Isn't he an obscure relative in Family Guy? No, he's not. He's the founder and chief executive of Citadel, one of the world's largest hedge funds, Lord love us, with £38 billion in assets. They don't make anything or do anything to increase the sum of human happiness. They just shove money around, but at least they don't have anybody executed, as far as we know. And that, as we know, is where the fucking bar is now. And Griffin claims to be, this is in America, of course, but claims to be a big-time football fan. In America, not quite the same thing. He said in an interview that they were quoting in the paper today, I've played soccer pretty much my entire life, falling straight down the manhole that Jesse Marsh was so careful to avoid last week. He said, I've been coaching my son for several years. So if he's been coaching his son, he probably knows a little bit about the touchline stuff, you know, the complaining about the referee, possibly running the line with the flag, maybe. My girls play soccer, he said again, is a team sport. That's really important. And he seems to have, he's got a grasp of the basics, you know. But ironically, and this is ironic, I checked after last week, you know, he has the opportunity to bid for Chelsea because of the previous owner's ties to an assault on the very notion of democracy. And yet Griffin is the largest single contributor to the Republican Party in America that is currently waging war on the very notion of democracy over there. And Todd Ricketts, meanwhile, is the finance chairman of the Republican National Committee. You know, the guys who can't bring themselves to accept the result of the last election. His brother Pete is the Republican governor of Nebraska. I mean, these are frankly terrible people. And their 80-year-old dad, Joe Ricketts, is the family liability.
The Muslim hating.
And to apologise for an email saying, Muslims are naturally my enemy, which is going to go down particularly well with N'Golo Kante and Antonio Rudiger, I think. But there's another mate of Trump's, absolutely. Woody Johnson, who owns the New York Jets. And there's Todd Bowley, the part owner of the LA Dodgers, who owns that because he massively outbid Stan Kroenke for it. And Mr. Holly Valance, Nick Candy, is slipping behind in the race and has rather petulantly bleated that Goldstein, Jonathan Goldstein is involved in the Todd Bowley bid, is a Spurs fan, as though that matters.
Yeah.
But still, Chelsea haven't, I don't know, did you hear about over there about how, there's not a lot of sympathy for Chelsea in their current plight because they've been bossing it for so long.
You're not going for behind closed doors now, are you? Because that amused me. Did you see that? You know, Chelsea genuinely asked the FA for the Middlesbrough behind closed doors to protect sporting integrity.
Yes, to maintain from...
And Steve Gibson...
Yeah, he had a great quote,
Steve Gibson, the Middlesbrough, chairman, long-time chairman, local man, you know, kind of the things you want, like we have at Stoke, apart from the league position. Actually, Middlesbrough aren't that far above us. He just said, Chelsea and sporting integrity do not believe it belong in the same sentence. Abramovich should be kicked out of football and Bruce Buck should be kicked out.
Yeah, he had another great quote, which was, where is the intellect of Bruce Buck, the chairman of Chelsea, who has been an apologist for his owner, where the trophies won over 19 years have come from corrupt money provided by Abramovich? And where is the intellect? That's just saying he's an idiot, isn't it? That's just as close as you can get to saying he's just a fucking idiot.
But,
It was extraordinarily tone-deaf, the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, he was. It was even on the BBC website, which I managed to access with the help of some young people. he called it a tin-eared decision. But what's interesting in that is, OK, here's Bruce Buck talking out, here's Steve Gibson talking out. And yes, it was depressing, you know, for Eddie Howe to say, you know, I'm here to talk about football. I'm a football person. I don't know about all this stuff. But the point is, where are all these chief execs that used to exist that fronted up these questions, whose job it was, even if you've got Abramovich's high-pitched voice so he doesn't want to speak, you have somebody in between that can come in and be the interlocutor or the translator.
It's not okay for Newcastle to have, if Eddie Howe is quite reasonably not up to speed with the execution thing.
Oh, fae.
But there must be someone whose job it is to be a spokesman for the club about those things.
Well, especially if you're calling it sports washing. If you're going to do sports washing, then you have a PR person, don't you?
You'd think. Otherwise, you're not washing, are you?
Yeah.
You know, you're not.
Not really. You're just
there. You're just waving your hands near the taps and then pretending to dry them. You know, that's basically...
Yes, I do that all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing about the Middlesbrough game at the weekend, the Cup game, even their own supporters' trust hated the idea and demanded that the club withdraw the request, which they did. But they're still bleating about how much they can spend on travel to games. And
£20,000 is not enough to Middlesbrough.
Because they need 30 grand to hire a private plane to fly up to Middlesbrough. And they were moaning about having to travel to Middlesbrough by train at a time when the leaders of Poland, Slovakia and the Czech Republic have travelled by train from Warsaw to Kiev. Very much like Chelsea, they couldn't fly because of the war thing, but they sucked it up and got on with it. They haven't managed Chelsea to get the three logo off the front of their shirts, despite their sponsors demanding that they do so. Some of the fans have been covering up with gaffer tape, but the club haven't managed to do it because they can't afford to buy new shirts now with no logos on. They just can't afford it. And there was one last thing on the Chelsea thing. There was a call convened with all the other Premier League clubs this week to update them on the Chelsea situation. And what do you think their concern was? You know, was it about the moral and ethical questions raised by the change of ownership?
If Chelsea can't buy tickets at our ground, why aren't we being compensated?
No, it wasn't that. It was, if they write off the debt to Abramovich, doesn't that give them an unfair advantage? You know, the new owners coming in. It means that, you know, it's all about me, isn't it? It's all about them, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah. So I think in the little time we've got before we break, I should bring you up to date with the things that have happened while you've been away in the last couple of days.
Yeah, go on.
You know, at the top of the Premier League, Manchester City lead is down from 14 points in January, is now down to 1. They drew at Selhurst Park, as we saw. Mark Gay played very well. And Patrick Vieira's extraordinary record, never having lost to City as a player or manager, goes on. And after beating Brighton at the weekend to keep the pressure on, Liverpool needed to beat Arsenal last night, which they did, which they won 2-0. And it was it's a good game, relatively comfortable. Two very nice goals close in, Jota and Firmino. So now it's all shaping up for a showdown on April the 10th. When they play one another. Brentford did well, won a game to put some distance between themselves and the bottom. There were a win for Watford and a defeat for Everton, so everything tightens up at the bottom, much like it might in cosmetic surgery, I guess. But Everton lost at home to Wolves, and they still have all these games in hand, but the fact is they've only picked up 3 points under Frank Lampard. They've won some games, but they won cup games. They've only picked up 3 points. And only Norwich have picked up less since he arrived. So, you know, he said, didn't he, that he didn't expect to come in and start winning games immediately, which is just as well. You know, keep your manage your expectations, you know.
But also, you know, who plays their way out of relegation form? It just seemed that when he bought Dele Alli and he brought in Van der Beek, you thought, I'm not sure that, especially with the gift of hindsight, obviously, but I'm not sure that that's the way to go, to tell you the honest truth. And so it seems to have been proved so far.
But, and the other thing that happened at the weekend was the Manchester United beating Spurs and Cristiano Ronaldo scoring his hat-trick as if to celebrate being the... being made the top goal scorer of all time by virtue of everyone he now has to catch having goals disqualified from their record, like Pele and some Austrian and German people from reimagining and so he suddenly has ridden to the top of the pile. And at the game he met Tom Brady, who's the legendary American gridiron footballer. He was watching the game. And afterwards he put a picture. He plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which is also owned by the Glazers. So, you know, I imagine he got some sort of discount on his ticket. I don't know, it's a mates rates or something. But finally, there was a picture of the two of them on the pitch after. And finally, a picture with someone who makes Cristiano look puny, or at least, you know, normal.
And what did he... Tell me what he put.
His Instagram message was, "Always a pleasure and a privilege to share some thoughts and ideas with another goat." Which is, Cristiano doesn't really do humble, does he? But I'd like it if he had his picture taken with Prince Andrew. Say, look at us, two goats together, two old goats together. But you wonder, don't you, with Cristiano Ronaldo, what thoughts and ideas they could possibly have shared. You know, when everyone else is so much worse than you and you're carrying the whole team, that's shit, isn't it? You know, or you know when you're filming yourself having a shower outside for Instagram? Do you wear Speedos or do you go commando? You know, how do you get shirts to fit your massive fucking neck that aren't just like a circus tent lower down your body? You know, but whatever.
You know, we know this about Ronaldo, you know, and this is why it's so upsetting that Pele, you know, is no longer the highest goal scorer, because you can't imagine Ronaldo ever doing an advert for erectile dysfunction,
not an advert for erectile dysfunction.
For the alleviation of erectile dysfunction. Yes. Oh, actually, maybe you could.
But no, I mean, the great thing was that on the Monday, the day after, Tom Brady met Cristiano Ronaldo. He reversed his decision to retire and said he was going to play for another season. And, you know, was that what they discussed is the thing. But apparently he was only retired for 41 days, which is two Watford managers. And just a day...
Or one Brian Clough's time, you know, at least.
44 days, that was. And Jock Steen also, 44 days. But just a day, as our guest will no doubt tell us, but just a day before he reversed his decision, a fan in America paid more than $500,000 for the ball with which he scored his last ever touchdown. The day before. Timing. And if you did see, I don't know if we've got any more time, but United have been... we had Justin Moorfield on, didn't we, a little while ago? And Morehouse. And his take was that Old Trafford was a terrible, shabby, leaky dump. Now the Glazers are apparently close to announcing a plan for the future of their home, which could be an expansion of the South Stand, it could be a complete revamp, or it could be knocking the whole place down and building a 90,000 stadium to rival Wembley, which would give them the problem of where to play their home fixtures during the 2 or 3 years this would inevitably take. Spurs played at Wembley, didn't they, while their stately pleasure dome was being constructed? And so Man United could just do that. It'd be handy for most of their fans, wouldn't it? You know, wouldn't have to traipse all the way up the M6, you know? So...
Well, you know, I think it's good to finish on Manchester United and then start on them again next time, because we're going to have to take a break. And I know that our guests will be delighted to talk about the pain and discomfort and disaffection that's happening at Old Trafford. So join us and him in a moment. Our guest today is an exiled actor and podcast presenter who hosts the official Leeds United podcast. He's also in All Creatures Great and Small with Stoke-on-Trent's Rachel Shenton. Hurrah. And, oh, yeah, he did a Harry Potter thing for about 10 years. So welcome to Matt Lewis. Matt, an official podcast. We dream of an official podcast. We are about as far away from being an official podcast as you could possibly get.
I mean, so are we, to be totally honest with you. I don't really know how it... honestly, I really don't. It was... So when we got promoted to back to the Premier League, me and a couple of friends... Leeds fans, we said, you know, it was in the height of COVID, as we know, and we sort of said, "Which should we do something? Should we not? You know, everyone seems to be doing podcasts at the minute where everyone's locked inside for COVID. Should we do something like that?" And I thought, "Yeah, but like I'm interested in it, but no one wants to hear me talk about it. No one's interested in what I've got to say.
That's so all we've got time for. That's so.
It's a good booking. Good booking, Gabe.
I'm sorry, guys, it'll be your lowest rated pod of all seasons. But so we thought, okay, well, that's a fair point. So we should probably find someone that they do want to listen to. We sort of knocked up a list of you know, ex-players and stuff like that. And Bex was top of the list, really. You know, we'd seen him on TV, and obviously I'd watched him growing up as a player, and we thought, oh, well, he's never going to do it. He's a bit of our dream option. And he came back straight away and said, yeah. And so we did. And then...
So basically, you pumped for the last person in a Leeds strip to score a winner at Old Trafford, is what you did.
Yeah.
Because that's going to appeal to all Leeds fans.
This is what I mean when I thought he's never going to say yes. He's our benchmark, and then we'll just go down from there.
Because he's still getting asked to do so many things on the back of that one goal. He's still, you know...
Completely.
It's still a full-time job.
I mean, I'll never forget it.
So just to say about being an official thing, so there's no editorial control, you're not advised, you get access to players, or have they just said you can call it official?
No, so the way it works is we just did it ourselves off our own back for half a season, and we were sort of trying to get ex-players and other rival fans that had a profile to talk about it. And then Leeds United happened to be in the market for making their own podcast. They heard ours. And they just said, hey, do you guys just want to become the official one? So we're no longer doing a Leeds. We are now the official Leeds United podcast. And we sort of just transitioned into that, really, which is why I say it. I don't really know how it happened.
You were bought out by the club.
Basically.
That's what's happened.
Yeah, that's kind of it.
Yeah. Did Angus Kinnear come round and speak to you about it?
He might have spoken to our producers. We did get him on the show, though, which was really cool, and we chatted about it. And obviously that means, you know, being official now means that we get a little bit more access to, you know, we just had Calvin
access,
Phillips on this week.
Right. Let's cut to the present. And obviously Bielsa, such a difficult thing when somebody who is so lionised reaches a point that the decision's got to be made. I imagine some fans thinking, I'm afraid he's got to go. Other fans are still singing his name when Jesse Marsh is there. What's your personal view on that?
Well, you know, it's... remains to be...
You can't say because you're at the official TV podcast.
Exactly. I had to be somewhat diplomatic with my employer's decisions. Obviously, the gamble, as I believe it to be, and I'm quite content to say I think it is a gamble, remains to be seen. Obviously, we had a big win at the weekend, but we'll have to see how it plays out, and it'll be judged on whether we stay up or not, because that's the fight that we're in. In my opinion, personally, I do believe that he should have been allowed to stay on. I think that the man that had got us to where we are, and this is no reflection on Jesse Marsh, by the way, who has the full support of all Leeds fans, including myself, and I hope he does a fantastic job, obviously. But it was just that I think that the man that had got us to where we were and overhauled the entire club and is genuinely responsible for the lion's share of all of our success. I think that he deserved to be given the opportunity to turn this around and to keep us up. And I do believe that he would have. And I think that it's one of those things where you sort of looking at football as if it's a results-based business where keeping us up is the most important thing. Or is there still a degree of loyalty to this man who got us to where we are in the first place?
I think it's a very, you know, and that in some ways is the joy of being a fan and not an administrator, in that, you know, they're sitting there and saying, can we afford to be relegated? But the other thing I would say is it's interesting from, let's just use three examples. If you've got Bielsa, you've also got Dean Smith at Villa, and you've got Chris Wilder at Sheffield United. And I think all of those clubs would say, God, without these guys, there's no way we would be where we are. There's no way we would have done as well in our first season. But all of them went in the third season. It worked for Villa. It didn't work for Sheffield United. Yeah. And the jury's out on you. But that's the gamble.
It's so seductive, isn't it? The idea that there will definitely be a new manager bounce is so... It's so seductive, especially where my team are right at the bottom of EFL2. All the teams around, including Oldham, all the teams around us have sacked the manager this season. I think all of the bottom eight or nine have sacked the manager, hoping for a lift of some sort and a short term fix, yeah. You know. And it's so seductive, that idea, isn't it?
What we feel, and we don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
They do look like, from the outside, watching Leeds under Bielsa and in the games since, they don't look obviously superficially unhappy. The players, they look very fired up, very enthused, in a way that they don't at Manchester United, for instance. There's an obvious, right. You know, body language thing. I mean, I don't think you ever got the feeling that. There wasn't love and respect from Marcelo.
Lost the dressing room.
Never got that feeling. It was just that. For Leeds, from the outside, it looks like you'd have had such a different season if you hadn't lost Phillips and you hadn't lost Cooper to injury, because you didn't have the defence and the screen of the defence that would have stopped you letting in four goals a week for a while, you know.
Yeah, those are his players. They are the spine of his team. And I do believe that if he'd been given the rest of the games with those players back, he would have kept us up. But, you know, again, we don't know the true thinking.
You don't know. And I mean, two things on that. One, if he's got his arm tied behind his back, that's going to make it very difficult for him to operate the drone when he's looking at other teams' training. So that's going to be difficult.
Or working the bolt cutters.
He also had to keep his balance, doing that squatting thing with the invisible bucket.
But also, actually, on a serious point of view, and this is true of all football clubs, okay? Which is all of those decisions have to come into your mind. You know, what's the financial imperative of us staying up? When are these players coming back? If we bring in Jesse Marsh, will players then leave, even if we do stay up? And how much of an attraction is it to play for Jesse Marsh rather than playing for Bielsa? All of these things. But do you know the terrible truth of the matter is, in football, these are the only decisions that these people have to make about the game itself. All of their other decisions are about running a company. Mm. And suddenly they have one, and only one usually, football decision to make, and that is the appointment of a manager. And that's why I think it's just so incredibly volatile. You know, that I'm not even really sure that they know, depending on who they are, of course, what exactly they're looking for.
There's an astronomical amount of finances involved. The stuff that, you know, your man, your regular guy in the terrace doesn't really give a monkey's about. And you have to have this constant argument with your, you know, between your heart and your head. And as a fan, Bielsa, whether it's right or wrong, and obviously maybe come into the season, if we had got relegated, I'd have a totally different opinion. But it became, and I said this on the podcast the other week, is that it became more about the journey than actually where we were going, in this weird way. And that actually, you know, no one enjoys getting Dick 6-0 or 4-0 or whatever, you know, the results we were getting. But it was such an enjoyable time, and we felt like we were so special throughout that period, and that there was just something more to football than just getting the 3 points by any means necessary. There was something more to it. The game was, there was a way you could play it. There was a way you could carry yourself. That actually, a lot of people genuinely would have said, I don't care if we go down. I just want to make sure that he's at the helm.
So you're just talking about the enjoyment of particular individual games rather than that whole run. So it's basically a sprint rather than a marathon, basically,
people just... It's hard to emphasise just how miserable being a Leeds fan was for so many years, and just how much fun Bielsa brought to it, and the community spirit.
Well, there was some great... I mean, even just in the last couple of weeks, there was the game where they came back against Manchester United and got two goals in a minute. An exciting game. That as a,
we
to
lost
watch
4-2.
As a neutral.
We lost 4-2 to our bitter rivals at home, and yet people will tell you... Those 5-10 minutes when we came back to 2-2 was their greatest moment at Elland Road for years. People will say that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very interesting to hear you speak, because, and I don't mean this glibly, there's something almost messianic about what you're talking about.
100%.
I want to go with this guy, whatever. I know what? I'd rather be with him than not be with him.
100%. And that's what I mean, why you eventually have to have that debate with your head, because you suddenly say that, But then when the reality comes through, and you know, next, you know, September or August, we're looking at going to Peterborough and all, you know, and God knows, I don't even know who's in the Championship anymore. I don't even care.
Just Stoke.
All right, there you go.
Stoke are the Championship archetype, aren't they? They're the miserable wet Tuesday evening games, aren't they? Those.
And then suddenly the reality of going to Stoke on a Tuesday night, and you go, oh, what was I thinking? The spell's been broken, and probably that would have happened. I don't know. Mm. It's very difficult. I mean, I genuinely feel like we've all been in a cult for 4 years, and we've been out, and now we're no longer in it. It's very hard to adapt, even if your brain's saying to you,
what level did you reach? It's like Scientology. Do you have to? I mean, obviously, you do the official podcast. So, in a way, you're like one of the disciples.
How much Kool-Aid did you drink?
In many ways.
That's right. Yeah. I am responsible for it. I'm one of the preachers, yeah.
Just to move away from that slightly and about the expat community in Florida where you are and going to watch games and meeting up with other Leeds fans. I'm interested in that. I'm also interested in, and I rather feel the answer to this might be no, is there any impact in the States about Jesse Marsh going to Leeds, or do people just have no idea what you're talking about?
Well, so the pub that I go to, which is mostly expats, it's mostly Brits that are in there. There is a not too small, you know, it's a relatively sizable American contingent as well, who are in there and of supporters of various clubs.
They're not just people looking to buy Premier League clubs, are they?
there might be a handful of them as well. They're people who've bought into it because NBC have really put their weight behind the Premier League and they're really trying to push it stateside. And obviously we've got a handful of American owners now. So if particularly in Florida, we've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers who are owned by the Glazers, who own Scum. Can I say that on this podcast?
Please.
Not allowed to say that on mine.
It's called the shit on this game.
Oh, okay. That works. And so obviously there's that connection there. You know, a lot of American football team, the Fenway Sports Group, they own Liverpool. So there is connections there, and so there is quite a American contingent. The most of the people I hang out with are actually just Englishmen. But I've been trying to tell as many people as possible about Jesse Marsh to try and get more interest and say, no, it's an American manager. You've got to come and check it out. It's the first one we've ever had. And he's like the third one ever in the Premier League.
It's Ted Lasso. It's Ted Lasso coming to life.
Well, that is invariably all I get in response.
Yeah. Well, that's what you're getting from me.
But he did mention it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he had to. He had no choice but to mention it. I thought his first press conference was really, really clever because he's obviously acutely aware of it. He's been in Europe for a long time, and he ticked off all the sound bites and stuff that lazy kind of journalists might opt for. I've got to get this. I've got to get the soccer thing out of the way. I've got to get the accent out of the way. I've got to get the Ted Lasso thing out of the way.
Which the Americans who are trying to buy Chelsea haven't got out of the way. They've come full bore soccer.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. I mean, that's if you're trying to win over a fan base, and especially as, again, he's well aware he's coming in after Bielsa.
Yes.
He's got to work doubly hard, and I think he's doing a good job.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you think he needs a translator, lad?
Well, I liked very much his quote after the... You must have seen the game at the weekend, the Norwich game, and the sort of thrilling Norwich equaliser in injury time, send on the young lad who should have been playing from the start, and he scores in injury time, and the win in injury time, and it's like... It was huge, and Jesse Marsh, who's only been there for like a fortnight, said that he would remember this game on his deathbed. And I think that is a fantastic.
Well, but to be fair, we don't know his medical history, so I'm not suggesting anything bad. I'm just saying we don't know that.
I mean, he's now the manager of Leeds United, so that's very possible. I mean, yeah. I don't know what his heart's like, but there's
a history there.
I think he got a nice. I mean, in the space of 2 weeks, he's got a taste of what it's like being at Leeds. I mean, we had a really, really great match against Leicester, still lost. Then we got absolutely, it was an an embarrassing performance against Villa and deservedly lost. And then we have a fantastic performance against Norwich, almost throw it away in the 91st minute, but somehow managed to get a winner 90 seconds later. It's all the emotions. It's ups and downs. We never do things the easy way. And he's going to have to get used to that quick, sharp, because that's the Leeds way.
See, I look at the Norwich game. I'm away. I didn't see it live. And there's only so much you can get out of the times of gold. So it looks to me like you've got out of jail. But obviously, I haven't seen the game. Was there a definite feeling that things had improved?
Completely. And again, I actually mentioned this on our show just this week. I was, you know, I'm always, I try to be optimistic, but also with this particular instance, I a little bit of a cautionary voice of reason. I said, it's still just Norwich. But that only really works if you look at the scoreline as being 2-1 and a last-minute winner. We dominated the game. But for, you know, a lack of composure or just the inability to concede chances, we should have been 3-0 at half time.
They were looking looking a lot better with Bamford back, even though he doesn't look fully fit. But
100%.
The whole shape of the team is different. If you've got someone who plays that role, that number nine role, and yes. not Daniel James, I think, has looked quite good there. But he's a winger, isn't he? And he's not like a target man. He's not gonna barge centre halves aside. And Bamford just gave them a problem that Leeds haven't been giving teams.
Absolutely. I mean, Dan James has really, really impressed me in recent weeks, and he's fast becoming one of my real favourites there. He works so hard, but the facts are he's not a striker. He's not a centre forward. No. He is a winger, and he excels in that wing position, as he did again mm-hmm. at the weekend. But as you're saying, Bamford just brings something completely different to the team, and it's something we've been crying out for. And also what Gelhardt brought at the end. Bamford is capable of doing what Gelhardt did, getting in those positions, being in the right spot.
It wasn't just the goal, was it, either? It was because he headed the ball on to the Rafinha.
Precisely.
Yeah. And then followed it in. I mean, and that's
what Bamford will do.
Yeah. And it's hard for James to do that because he wants it at his feet.
It is.
What's difficult for Dan James, and he's still a relatively young player. And I saw Dan James when he played at Swansea, and you know he's electrifying. But if he's got nobody with him, if you're a winger, you know, when do you release the ball? Because eventually you're just going to have to take it on your own and you're going to bang it into a bloody fullback. If there aren't people going with you, okay, then you've got a choice to release early, release it late, hit the byline, whatever. But if there's nobody with you, there's nowhere to go, really.
Yeah, completely.
And also, Bamford, one of the things I really like about Bamford is that he has, and this is an observable phenomenon, I contend, he's got that very large head. So he looks like a giant primary school child.
He does.
Do you know what I mean? He's got that sort of very fret. Do you know how primary school boys especially have heads that are too big for their bodies? And he looks a little bit like that. I don't know what his reading age is, and I'm sure he's a very clever lad, and he's on your podcast all the time. But I'm afraid that's what I think when I see him. And all the better for scoring goals in the top flight when you are a giant primary school
kid. He speaks very well for a primary school kid. He does.
He does. I mean, perhaps that's part of his... That's his secret. That's it. I mean, that's what it does. It intimidates the defence. I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, talking about being...
such a brilliant naivety.
Talking about being good at talking. But there's a rumour... There was a rumour that... that Bielsa understood more English than he let on. Do you know anything about that?
I think he knew more English than some of the players, to be honest.
That sometimes he would correct the interpreter when the interpreter beside him had said something.
Here's the thing with Bielsa. Everyone kept saying, like, oh, when's he going to learn English? Bielsa understood English just fine. And I know many, many people who have spoken to him and had conversations with him. Mm. The point was, as he admitted this before, he said, I'm going to continue speaking in my native language because I don't wish to be misinterpreted. Mm. He said, I don't want something that I try and find the words for to be taken by the media and spun into something which is not what I meant. So I would prefer to go through an interpreter in my native language.
And then he got a misinterpreter.
It reminds me actually of an ex-Leeds player, Duncan McKenzie, who you're probably too young to have ever seen play. I don't know whether he went to Leeds from Anderlecht or he went to Anderlecht from Leeds. I think he went to Leeds from Forest, didn't he? He went to Anderlecht anyway. And of course he goes there, he's an English footballer and he sits down in the transfer talks and they're just chatting away, blah, blah, blah in French. And they don't realise he can speak French. He sits there and screws them for the most fantastic deal.
just by saying nothing.
And then as he walks out, yeah, well, no. And Chippenham go, well, actually, I'm thinking maybe not that. And they're thinking, God, he's clever, isn't he? And as he walked out, he spoke to them in sort of fluent French and said, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to coming and playing with you. Yeah.
Super.
And then as a celebration, he went and jumped over a mini-miner.
He did, and threw a golf ball from one end of the pitch to the other. Is he part of your Leeds history? Are you aware of Duncan McKenzie?
I am aware of the jumping over the vehicle at Elland Road pitch.
Yeah. But not the throwing the golf ball from one end to the other.
No, the golf ball's a new one. Next, but tell me that.
That was another one of his tricks. You know, in the days when a warm-up was considered to be a little bit fancy, you know, and instead the warm-up would be some sort of party trick.
Right.
And he used to get some players to down a pint or a yard of ale, you know, before the game. Just for entertainment.
Right.
Simple.
Or maybe smoke
that.
Two fags.
Yeah. Extraordinary.
Or do that thing where they could throw a fag into their mouth.
I wonder how that'd go down in Bielsa's era, if that's how we're warming up. I wonder what he'd have to say about that.
Listen, Matt, that's been really, really interesting and a great thing for us to be able to boast that we spoke to somebody in Florida. That makes us very, very happy. Good luck with the podcast and good luck with everything else. I hear that All Creatures Credit Small has become a bit of a sleeper hit in the States. Is that right?
It has, yeah. I mean, it's done really, really well over here. I mean, I guess it's kind of part of that similar, you know, the Downton Abbey kind of period British, and it's very quaint and very nice and it's been on the TV over here and they've done really, really well. It's going again for series three the Americans.
And is Rachel Shenton still in it?
She is indeed.
Good Stoke fan. That's what we like to hear.
She's never mentioned it.
She doesn't feel like she has to all the time, mate. Some people just have red and white blood in their veins. They don't need to be putting stuff on the wall. Cheers, Matt. Thank you so much. Guys. Thank you, chum.
See you later. Bye-bye.
So, thanks to Matt. This is the famous sloping pitch. We'll have more fun from all around the world next week, but probably just from near my house. Sports Social Podcast Network.